And I am Brian.
And this is R&B Talks.
R&B Talks. Okay, so something that happened today. This is in the news, but I'm only pointing it out because of the hypocrisy of it.
Let's go.
Mrs. Corinne Jean-Pierre.
Oh, God.
Came out today and said she was changing her voting status to independent. Ahead of her writing her tell-all book on the broken White House that she lied about for years. I laughed. A friend of mine sent me the article. This is a woman who ferociously lied for the better part of 4 years about everything. And then you don't have your high paying position in the cabinet anymore. So now you got to make some money off a tell all book after telling everybody for 4 years that he was the perfect, greatest, bestest, most fantastical president ever. In case you don't know, in case you've been living under a rock, I'm talking about Joe Biden. And then you come out and say, well, yeah, it was all jacked up. I just didn't want to say anything.
Here's, I'll be honest with you, Brian. I haven't paid any attention.
Neither have I.
I shouldn't say any attention, but very, very little attention. They've really pissed me off with this whole big, beautiful bill shit. I'm sorry that's so strong, but I'm telling you, it has.
It is what it is.
I'm just so sick of the excuses of being like, well, we got to make sure we stop all the left stuff. So we got to, you know, do all this. And eventually we'll get around. The thing is, the eventually we'll get around to it thing is dumb because we have this is the best opportunity they've had.
Well, here's the thing.
In a long time.
No, you won't.
Well, here's nice what try. Happens. Like the left get in and they'll do everything.
Oh yeah.
They don't care what happens.
They're unmerciful.
It doesn't matter. They'll do everything they can, right?
Yep.
Until it creates all this bloated stuff and everything else, because they know if they lose, they can come back in some other time, do some other thing. And then, so then they get voted out because they did too much.
Yeah.
They went too far.
Yeah.
Well, the right gets in, and this is exactly what Nick Freitas was talking about today.
Yep.
He said, and I'll not quote him, but it basically like the right gets in and just it won't do enough. They get voted out because they don't do enough. It's ridiculous. And well, that's what'll happen.
It's like I've said for the last, I don't know. And look, I'm not into the whole Donald Trump. Here's where I'm at, right? Like the thought of watching or reading another article about politics makes me want to vomit. The only reason I knew about the Corinne Jean-Pierre thing is a friend sent me the article, which I thought the article was interesting. I read it. Like it was an interesting article. It had some interesting things in it that I didn't know, but, if you're expecting anything but bloat lies and BS from from Republicans, from, you know, this big, beautiful bill. Okay. Well, great. You're going to raise the child tax credit. You're going to take overtime taxes away and tip taxes away. Well, that's great. That'll last for 4 years until the next president comes in and the next set of pressures comes in and the next, you know, because here's what's going to happen. I don't think the Democrats are going to win an election for the next 12 to 16 years. And the reason is I think we know too much. I think the veil has been taken off completely as to what they actually are. And the lies have been exposed. Every lie has been exposed. You now have Democrats that are about to be prosecuted by the federal government for literal felony crimes. Like there's a lot going on in the Democratic Party. There's a lot of corruption. But what happens is even if you have a repeated, like, okay, let's just say right now that Donald Trump is the best that the Republican Party has to offer. Okay, I'll agree with that on principle. Well, then next let's say you got J.D. Vance coming into office. Well, then you got to do a whole bunch of political favors to get the nod from the Republican National Convention and blah, 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 blah. So he's going to go in owing people. And then he's going to make a whole bunch of promises and he's going to talk about all the things that did or didn't happen and how he's going to be different. And it's no different than when Reagan left office and Bush came in behind him. It's a literal crippled system. Like it's crippled. It can't implode because it's already caved in on itself. We're $40 trillion in the hole. We've caved in on ourselves, right? The American dollar is one of the least respected currencies in the world right now.
Well,
we don't have any clout in foreign countries anymore. Countries don't look at us as that like they used to.
Well, for one, here's what I'll say to that. The world has bought. Okay, let me say that the most. How should I put this? The more wealthier or were wealthier nations, the first world, bought into the hype of like the communist agenda.
Yeah,
I mean that's what. You know, you could go. Well, I won't because that'll go down. But so there's reasons why they think about America because of that. Really, mm-hmm. We're still the richest and most powerful nation in the world. Period.
Yep.
And that's not going to go away anytime soon. But, and you're right about the dollar. It's not worth as much as it would be.
Well, it's not backed by anything.
But again, we're not going to do anything productive. Like, until they end the Fed, we will still have, there will still be a monopoly on how money is managed. And they'll still tell you what your dollar's worth. And it'll still be a piece of paper. And I mean, look, we go on and on. But I guess the point being is that, you know, I voted for tax cuts. I voted for a drastic downsizing of our government.
As did I.
Mean, I'm talking drastic. That's what I wanted. That's what was talked about. And it seems like Trump wants to do that. And then Congress and the Senate say, whoa, we got constituents that we need to appease and that blah, blah, blah.
And here's a telltale sign. Elon left. He's done with Doge. He did his job. He's gone back to private sector.
Which he created a shit storm earlier, too, with his tweet about the bill.
Well, he did, because he's right.
Yeah.
It's literally, you know, you hear that giant sucking sound, Reggie? It's the big, beautiful bill.
Now, look, defunding Planned Parenthood is a win.
Yeah.
I'm ecstatic about that.
It's not even Planned Parenthood. Defunding garbage programs in general.
But they didn't defund all of them. They should have. That's the problem.
Well, because you owe people. Donald Trump owes people.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Right? It's crazy.
Like, you know, and Thomas Massey and Rand Paul, I don't agree with them. You know, I mean, Thomas Massey wanted to just shut down the government, period.
I was happy to do it.
It would have been chaos. It would have been rioting. Nah. There would have been looting.
Nah.
It would have been everywhere.
They did it before, dude. None of that happened. You had people stepping up, cutting the grass. Come on now. We didn't have any rioting, looting. It wouldn't happen.
I think it would.
Nah.
And the reason it would happen is because of what Biden did. Biden plugged everybody into the Matrix. He turned everybody into Neo.
I'm telling you right now, if they shut down the entire government, I'd be happy about it. And I'd be like, okay, cool. Then I'm going to now protect my family, do everything else, and then let's see what happens. But I wouldn't care. It wouldn't be any worse than this.
Well, and if they shut down it would. Because if we shut down the government, that means the military shuts down.
They always keep that going. It doesn't matter if they shut down the government. They always keep that going.
They no way, man.
Yeah, they do.
They did last time. Not without oversight.
They did last time. They shut down the government. And guess what happened?
Yeah, but when you say shut down the government,
shutdown like they would have done if the
no, I'm talking about Massey was calling for just close it,
mm-hmm.
Like shut it all down.
You're still gonna have mechanisms in place to take care of things because they have all these contingency plans in the military for all that stuff that it happens, dude. There's all kinds of ways for the critical systems and stuff. They have plans for all that.
Mm,
yeah, they do.
I don't know.
I've seen some of them.
I've seen their plans and how they work out. I don't trust anything they tell me.
Well, I mean, granted, but I guess it just doesn't matter to me anymore. That's how disenfranchised I am.
Well, I don't think for me, it's not about being disenfranchised anymore. For me, it's just about, I don't believe anything they tell me. I don't have any faith in our government. Like
I have zero.
Like they don't have the, It's a giant popularity contest.
I mean, granted, I think we're better off with the Trump and the conservative parties in majority power stuff than we are with the other way.
Yeah.
But really, almost anymore, it's just six one way, half a dozen another.
Yeah. On everything.
It's just, yeah. I mean, you know, you got promises from this and this and this. And the, I mean, you know, it's just idiotic. You know,
I mean, and to give them credit where credit is due, he, as far as the border goes, he's done an amazing job.
Well, yeah, I mean, cleaning that up is definitely sure. And I mean, doing that, they're doing, look, and the effort that is finally being shown to go after the child predators and the child pornography stuff and all this stuff,
yep.
I'm tickled to death. I think if there's anything in the whole entire, if they said, hey, we want to put together this massive thing to end, you know, the child stuff, everything, and it's going to raise your taxes by 50%. I'd be like, yes, let's do it. Because of all things to spend my money on, I would, here, you can have it and gladly do it if you're going to get rid of it. Damn. I am so sick of this crap where you're like, well, we're going to take your money and we're going to spend it over in Bolivia on some gay opera or there's, you know, let's do some freaking, some kind of stupid other, and it's going to cost $700 million. No. Of all things that need to be protected and saved and everything else, our kids need to be that. And I just, that makes me angry more than anything. And to know that we are the country that is the number one, I guess you'd say partaker in this kind of stuff and all this crap. It's insane. And it should be a massive, complete, massive operation to get to just eradicate.
Too much money in it.
Well, I don't care. Go away.
And I mean, that's the problem. Too much money in it.
You start lining them up and hanging them in the street, dude. That's what I'm saying. That's no way.
Don't waste your rope, man. Just kill them.
I'm making public, bro. That's all I'm saying. But speaking of this, happy reminder what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah month.
All right, you're going to have to explain. Happy reminder. Oh, I got it. Never mind. I just assume, you know what else this month is, right? It's Men's Mental Health Month. I'd rather think about that.
Me too.
Yeah.
And we talked about that last June, by the way, too.
It's Men's Mental Health Month. And I am very much taking on the cause of, I know I'm not allowed to say this word on YouTube, suicide. Is that suicide?
Yeah, probably. We're not monetized though.
Yeah. The statistics are as such: 8 out of 10 suicides worldwide are men. In the United States, 7 out of 10 suicides are men. And if the numbers keep flowing forward, by the end of 2030, 8 out of 10 in the United States will be men. There's a real problem. Men's mental health is being ignored. It's being trampled on.
It's one of the reasons why we're here.
Yeah.
Ryan.
I don't care about Pride Month. I don't really, it's kind of like a cartoon, you know, and they're suffering right now anyway, because they've lost sponsors and, you know,
look at the difference between 2024 and 2025. Yeah. If like all the logos and all this other stuff changing and everything else, guess what's new? There's not nowhere near that. And you know what? Good. And it needs to be.
If you want to go do what you're going to do in your private life, I'm going to be concerned about the fact that 70% of men, 70% of suicides are men. And right now the statistic is two out of every four men that you've met in your life have either considered, thought about, or attempted suicide in their existence.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
That is, you know, because I will openly admit, I've never thought about taking my life, but I have had moments in my life where it's been like, if I was here anymore, would it matter?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, there's that.
There's only a small step in one direction for that to become
a problem,
right? Yeah. And it's really odd, because some of the studies I've read have said that part of the reason there's been a rise in men's suicide is because there has been a decline in the importance of spirituality in men's lives. So take with that what you want to take with it. Because I'm a holistic guy, right? Like, in the sense of, I think that your mind, your body, your spirit have all got to be right there where they need to be. Your emotions have to be in check. All those things. I've had a rough week. I'm okay. I'm fine. I'll self-check. I'll correct. I'll be fine. Right. But a lot of people, especially men, weren't given those kind of tools. And I had to certainly go figure mine out. But right.
Women also have been told that we're supposed to be more open, and it's better for us if we actually open up and tell them all our problems and all this kind of stuff. And yeah. When in reality, that's just not how most of us are wired.
Well, it's not even that. Anytime that I have ever done that, it has damaged that relationship and it has changed the way I'm seen in their eyes.
Not my wife, dude. I mean, I tell my wife a lot of stuff,
but I don't. And here's the reason why.
I do.
You know, and somebody, you know, my family would rather watch me die on my white horse than me come off of it. Right. So I would rather self-check and be the protector for my kids and my wife than distract myself with worrying about those things. Cause I know that really at the end of the day, I'm saved, but nobody on this earth is going to come save me. Right.
All I'm saying is, man, is your wife should be the one person that is your confidant that should see you in light, and you should be able to open up and talk to your wife.
Well, now I don't get like all weepy and emotional. Well,
no, that's not what I'm saying. I
didn't. But if something's bothering me, I'll say it.
Like, I go through, usually what I do is I go through a stage. I'll have this like contemplative, brow furrowed look for a while. My wife will know something's going on, but she knows I'm not going to necessarily talk about it because it's just,
I'm working
gears,
it out.
I got gears turning and stuff like that. Maybe I don't sleep well for a few nights and all this crap or something. There's something going on, right? And then finally I'll be like, I'll feel like it. I'm like, hey, babes, I'm really dealing with this. It's really weighing on me hard, right? It's not a weepy nonsense conversation or whatever, right? That's not what I'm saying. But my wife also is the wife who will say, who doesn't expect me to sit there and be this weepy nonsense individual. She doesn't want that for one.
Neither does mine.
And I'm not made for that either. Yeah. It's not, now doesn't mean I haven't shed a tear or whatever, but it's not like that. Look,
there's a time and a place.
It's a rare occurrence for me to sit there and freaking cry. I don't do that. That's just not, I just don't. I'm old school. It's just, I was raised that way. I don't think you should be as some crybaby dude. I don't like it. So, but anyway, I guess what I'm saying is my wife's the kind of woman though, where she'll just come up randomly, give you that touch on your shoulder or something, lay her head on your shoulder or something like that. Out of the blue, and you'll be like, and it automatically makes me feel better, right?
Yeah.
She's just saying, I'm here, right? Yep. That's the, I'm telling you, man, if more women would do that with their husbands, just reach over, put your hand on their chest or something at night before they go to bed, I'm here, just to say you're here, you love them. That's
all you really need.
That does.
My wife has wonders. The amazing ability to quiet my mind. Like, my mind can be, there can be a storm going on in my head and she can come up behind me and put her hands on my shoulders and everything goes quiet for a moment. And I think that's something that God created in women.
Yes.
That's a very powerful thing, right?
You know, but these women who insist that, well, he doesn't ever tell me, so he must not. I mean,
he doesn't tell you because he loves you.
Yeah. Like, and the other thing is too, some men won't, they've been raised to not say anything about their problems. Nothing. They will be buried in the grave before you know what's wrong with them.
Yeah.
That, and it's, and sometimes men just don't talk. Like, look, not all men are talkers, dude. I mean,
no, they're not.
It's just, you know, and I'm not necessarily talkative all the time, even though my mouth runs a lot when I'm particularly in a good mood or in a really bad mood.
Yeah, that's true.
both ways. But yeah, man, mental health for men, it's critical, dude. And I mean,
and that's something else I would like to encourage people too, is if you know a guy and he is struggling, ask him, give him an opportunity to say, yes, I'm struggling.
Can I tell you this though, dude, like being in this phase of my life, right? Where you're almost like I'm in this mentor kind of thing. I have several different families and stuff that we interact with and everything. And that it's almost like you're the mentor of these other guys. Right. And then you pour out stuff, but it just, and it's part of it where it doesn't ever change. And they keep asking you about what to do, and you keep telling them, hey, maybe you should try this or this, yeah, or you can do this, this, and then it's just a circle, right? It's just a circle, yeah, circle, circle. Because it can be really frustrating. It's just one of those things where you just have to keep trying.
Yeah.
Keep
pouring in.
Yeah. It's just so frustrating, man. For if you really gave a damn, right, and you're trying, and you've like, you see this clear as day, you're like, whoa, dude. I mean, and it just doesn't happen. You're just like, well, and eventually even, you know, it gets to the point where I get this tough love thing where I'm just like, bro, I told you why you're repeating the same thing over and over again. Get your big girl panties on and let's get moving in the right direction. Yeah. This is ridiculous,
dude. I've had to have that conversation several times.
Yeah. I mean, it just happens, but I get like, it's just funny how that is, but
you know, I usually wind up going, you know, I think I've had this conversation before with you, you moron, stop doing it. But anyway, just, you know, I don't care about Pride Month. I don't think anybody really cares about it anymore.
But it had its
high crest, right?
I saw this stupid, I don't even know why it popped up in my Instagram feed, but it was this obviously broken female, I think. I don't know. It's hard to tell anymore sometimes, but who was like, we earned our flag. And I just had to think of how stupid that was.
Well, here's something else. Something else I'll tell you. And I have met several people in the gay and lesbian community that have had enough. If that's not a knockout for you, a conversation the other day with a lady who self-proclaiming was a lesbian, but she's like, why does everybody have their business in the street? Listen. She's like, I live my life. I don't get on a bullhorn and talk about it. She goes, I don't drink dance in the streets. She goes, I am who I am. Well, but I think there's a section of even the homosexual and lesbian community that are like, enough.
Well, there is, but you know, I wouldn't appreciate it if a bunch of straight couples were walking down the street half naked doing all kinds of nonsense. I wouldn't appreciate that either. Like, I don't want to see none of that. Yeah. That's not for public.
But that goes back to what I've always said, Emma, and that is that it's not about Gay Pride Month. I don't want to know what you do in your bedroom. I don't care. I don't want you to celebrate what I do in mine. So why should I have to celebrate what you do in yours?
I mean, I think we should.
I don't care.
We should encourage the nuclear family.
Well, regardless, though, at the end of the day.
But I don't care.
I don't care. I if you ask me and you want to sit down and have a one-on-one conversation, I'm glad to have that conversation with you. But I'm not. I don't. There's not a straight Pride Month. There's not a.
I don't care. I would say the same thing. Get it out of here.
It doesn't matter. If you are confident in what you believe, shut up.
If you want, just
live your life,
right? If you want biblical ideas, if you want to talk to me about something about that, then fine.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, here's what I'll say this. I really don't care what you are. I'm not your judge and jury. Yeah. At the end of the day,
it's not my job. I
can tell you what the Bible says about it. I can tell you what I think is legitimately the facts of life about things. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to sit there and judge your reality for where you're going to end up. That's not for me to do.
If
right?
I put myself out there to help somebody, I don't have a questionnaire I ask before I help them. I don't go, are you gay?
No,
you
I don't care. So I'm saying, I mean, I come across really tough because I think that there is a biblical standpoint that you have to stand on, period, that those principles have to apply, period. But at the end of the day, that doesn't mean that, because I think that that's a sin, mean that I'm going to put that somewhere and go, well, because you're this, I cannot. No, That's not what that, that's not what that means. That's,
I ain't rebuking nobody.
I rebuke perverts. I'm just tired of being assumed that we're by the way,
I'm tired of people assuming that we're hateful.
I'm tired of people saying, well, I'm afraid. I am not one bit afraid of anybody for their sexual preference. Matter of fact, far from it. So there's no homophobia or whatever.
Unfortunately,
I am not.
Unfortunately, that language is so broken. Phobia. I'm not afraid of transgender people. I'm not afraid of gay people.
No, it's stupid. It's so dumb.
I don't have phobias of the shovels in my shed. I really am not scared of a whole lot. But you can catch
the gays.
Oh, yeah, dude. I heard that ridiculous garbage.
Yeah, I know.
You better not be able to catch the gays. That's the stupidest thing I ever heard.
I know, man. Anyway, look, I won't dig into that too much, but Men's Mental Health Awareness Month.
Yes.
Is here, and we will put some effort into men's mental health this month.
Well, and just a real quick thing, so people can know, there are certain behaviors that men who are struggling with their mental health.
What are those behaviors, engage Brian? In.
Risky behaviors like high speed driving.
What if you do that already?
Well, but I'm talking about like high speed driving, listening to music at high levels while high speed driving, listlessness, a real lack of focus. There's a lot of little different things that you'll see in those men to give you a trigger to say, hey, are y'all right? But anyway, we're here to talk about something else today.
Okay. First, something that did help my mental was I got to work real tree job with a real tree company doing real tree stuff. And that was cool.
I know, but you're all broke and down now.
Well, I know that was tough. I cut down 19 trees in 2 days, cleaned them up and everything too. And my knee was already screwed up before I even went to the daggone job site.
Okay.
And that's what really.
Did you wear a brace?
I did.
Okay, good.
I did. And that allowed me to hobble around. As soon as I got home, though.
Took the brace off, knee was killing you.
Took the brace off, took a shower, and I was done. Done. I mean, that was cool. And you know what it is being a guy? You're obviously trying not to look like a gimp when you're on the job site with a bunch of other dudes. Yeah, you know, you're trying not to be the guy who's.
Is your knee hurt? No, it's just too strong.
But I'm the oldest. I'm the oldest guy there for one. Which is crazy.
That's dirty business.
I know, but it was cool to be able to rig up some trees too. Like I brought all my rigging crap, and we had to rig some of them to fall a certain way, and all this kind of stuff, and just knocking them down, man. But I messed up on a tree, and I gotta say this really clear. Cutting down a tree is the most dangerous thing you will do on a piece of property that you're doing with a chainsaw. It is the most dangerous thing. By statistically speaking, you're more likely to die doing that than anything else. Usually when you're doing that, it's because the tree has a problem. If the tree has a problem, there's stuff all over your head that, mm-hmm. and this kills a lot of guys that a branch or something falls down, hits them in the head. I'm telling you, trees fall the wrong way, or they barber chair, or they do something, and it is not
for the faint of heart.
No, you really need to. Men really, well, everyone really needs to know this. I don't care what you are, but you really need to make an effort to not just assume it's going to go cool and everything else. Really put some effort into knowing how to do it, at least a little bit, right? And here's a great example. I've cut down many trees enough to where this guy asked me to come on and help him with this big old land clearing thing, right? And I made a mistake. I got my big saw out. I'm cutting a tree. I've notched it out to where it needs to go. I'm cutting on the back cut, and I'm looking at it, I'm looking up to make sure there's nothing, because these are all rotten. They're like really terrible trees. It was really, that's the other part that was really kind of shitty, but. And before I knew it, I had cut the hinge too much. I'd cut the hinge on the one side of the tree, and it falls this way, right? At me. Right. And so the saw then was not going to come out. I even I was sitting there. I saw the tree move my way, and I'm like, oh, man, I just did it. And I knew it was happening, and it fell on my, you know, it pinched, bent the bar, and then it, the butt end of the tree hit my saw, broke it. And it's my big, very expensive chainsaw that that is now not functional at the moment. So even if you know somewhat what you're doing.
Still something bad can happen.
And they're trees. It's a biological thing.
Yeah.
Like they're not the same. They are unpredictable, you know, and it's just weird how they'll just do, you know, that's why they do the hinges. Okay. There's a reason why they have so many different types of hinges and how you can cut trees down, because there's so many different scenarios that would apply. And, I'm just thankful, you know, no one got hurt or anything, and we definitely were able to cut some down. And I mean, it was cool though. I really appreciated Tim from Tim's Tree Service for inviting me out to cut them down and stuff like that. That was cool to do it for, at least for a legit tree service. I got to do something. But what I keep saying all the time, I would drop everything and do that for a living. And I can tell you right now that that's a no. I would not do that. Now, granted, this was so different. This wasn't just like, you know, Bob and Mabel's, you know, got a tree that you need to cut down and all this kind of stuff. And you go on to the next job site. This was there was like 21, 22 trees to cut down in a single piece of area to prepare for like a house. Right.
Yeah.
And, so you're doing a lot more in one day than you would ever do if you're just doing it, you know, residential type of stuff or whatever. Right.
Yep.
So it isn't like that, but it was cool. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it immensely. I really did. I thought it was really cool. If my knee would have been not injured, I think I would have had a hell of a lot more spunk when I was out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was good, man. Good. Anyway, that's my personal testament. The other thing is, part of that is why we're really late on our episode. The other is Brian's fault, but that's, you know, whatever.
It's all my fault. I'm to blame.
But yeah, so this for our podcast and YouTube friends and listeners, apologies. You'll probably be listening to this if you catch it when it's released on hopefully tomorrow sometime. So that'd be Thursday, June 4th. I'm sorry. So maybe not. It might be Friday. I don't know. But anyway, sorry about that. It just life happened, and that's just how it worked out. If you all would pay us something, we'd probably do this on a regular basis for sure.
Yeah, but we don't get paid.
We don't get paid.
We're not really concerned.
Yeah. Sorry. But all right. So today, besides chit-chatting about all the other stuff that was going around, I brought this up to Brian because I've been thinking about it anyway, and it's really the topic of multi-generational households and how that has been perceived in our culture and how it is perceived in around the world even today and stuff, and why we don't encourage that as much as we do. And things like that. So I'll just open it up to you, Brian. Just general thoughts, dude. Like when you think about a multi-generational household, how do you define that?
For me, a multi-generational household is usually when you have, usually in my opinion, two generations minimum of adults and probably a generation of children. That could be a parents and then kids and then grandkids, or it could be parents and then their kids and then their, it can go different ways, but usually have two generations of adults and a generation of children. But that's not necessarily how it works in every culture. I know there's a very strong draw to multi-generational households in like the Indian cultures and in the Japanese culture, that there's a very strong pull for the younger generation to care for and honor the older generation, which I feel like that's part of kind of what we've lost in this era of selfishness. You know, we've lost that need to want and preserve and respect the wisdom of the people that are older than us.
You mentioned that there's some statistics here from the Pew Research, some Pew Research that was done from the Census Bureau in the 2020s, in 2020s, I should say. Asian American, there's 29% in multi-generation. Okay, this is percent in multi-generation households, right? So Asian Americans are 29%, are in Hispanic, Latino, 27%, Black, yes. African American, 26%, White, 16%, Native American, 25 to 30%. So that tells you, like you said, like Asian households are much more willing to do that. I know Hispanic especially, bro. I mean, like I know when I used to do work for a down in Lexington for a guy who had horse farms, almost all of them lived in a multi-generation household. There was like, I don't think any of them didn't. Yeah. They always had more than, you know, it was mom, dad, and their kids and uncles. I mean, it was like a lot, right? That would live in the same roof for there. So I think that I can tell you that from what all the research that I put into this, it was around the I think the beginning of the baby boomer generation.
Yeah, 60s and 70s, yeah.
The 50s, 60s, 70s, when you had this push to, you know, the economy was booming at that point.
Right? Yeah, the economy rose tremendously over that 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, so it was like, you know, everybody get out and get your own house and do your own thing. But that obviously it's actually starting to come back the other way now, where you've had a slow incline since the 80s of more people putting into this multi-generational household type of idea. People, a lot of days, you know, they have a lot of problems with family issues and stuff like that. But, I guess I'm struggling with it where I don't know why anymore. I don't know why we're not more encouraging.
There's no respect for wisdom. Let's be clear, right? Listen to, you know, and I've done a really good job at raising my kids to not behave this way. Unfortunately, that doesn't go to every kid I've met. So yeah. There's a very big lack of respect for wisdom. Like nobody shares wisdom, you know, or nobody values wisdom. I know that even though my great grandparents didn't live with my grandparents, that we were there every week. And my grandfather would sit with his father and they would talk about life and he would seek wisdom from him. And, you know, me and my father, you know, if I've got something going on, I call him because I need wisdom. And my wife and I have talked, if my dad ever decided he wanted to move in with us, that we'd kick the door wide open and let him roll right in. Right. Like there's no, you know, and I think also it expands a little further than your household. I have multi-generational friendships. Like, I have friends that are older than me, friends that are younger than me, and I value those friendships because there's wisdom that you can garner from those generations. But I think the general consensus of it all is we've just have this, especially in this last generation. I've even lost track. What do they call the current generation?
I don't know.
Generation.
No, I don't care.
Whiz bang, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. They have a real lack of respect and want to seek wisdom. And I think a lot of that has to do with social media, because people think they can read a post on social media or watch a video on social media and they're an expert. Well, that's not at all true. you only know what that 30-second, 45-second to 2-minute clip taught you. If a subject is broad enough, it can take years and years and years to become an expert on it.
Or just life experience in general, right? About dealing with just everyday life stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, even more critical.
You know, having the wherewithal to go, yeah, man, I don't know enough. But one of the reasons I figured this out is as I've had conversations with this younger generation, they are voraciously stuck to a broken ideology. And it doesn't matter how much wisdom you bring into that sphere, that ideology doesn't go away.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, I think it's a lack of wisdom. I also think it's a lack of relationship. I have a good relationship with my father. I have a good relationship with my wife's father, my wife's mother. I have a good relationship with everybody. I have a good relationship with anybody who is respectful to me. But I don't think people see the value in the relationship either, or what comes from the relationship. I am encouraged at seeing that there is an increase in multi-generational households. I'm not encouraged by what's causing it, because it seems to be what's causing it is economic hardship.
Economic, right?
But great things can come from that, right? But overall, I think that. Am I saying that you never need to get out on your own and never need to own your own home and never? No, I'm not that guy, right? There eventually will come an age where you want to strike out on your own and try to live life your way. But is it necessarily when you turn 18? No. Is it necessarily when you turn 22? No. It's when you're ready and you've put yourself in a position where you can do that well. That's when the time is, right? But there's this weird thing too, and I'll be honest with you. I had this mentality for a long time. It's, well, my sons become men, they got to go out in the world and get the blah blah blah, yes, blah 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 blah. I've completely changed my tune on that.
Yeah,
like my sons are welcome in my home as long as they are trying to advance their lives. The moment you become the kid that just wants to live at home because you don't want any responsibility, that tune's going to change. But if you're advancing your life, or you're studying for something, or you're trying to make yourself better, dude, my house is always open, right? Like, you can stay as long as you need to. I don't know, man. I feel like there was something. I feel like, even though I know I've read the statistics, you shared your statistics with me and I've gone through all those, and I know the statistic, it was economical as far as why it started to kind of fade away. I kind of feel like also there's been an increase in, it's even in the churches, man. It's even in the churches. I've been in churches where it's mostly older people and they don't respect the younger generation, or it's mostly younger people and they don't respect the older generation. And it's this, I feel like there's this undercurrent of spirituality to it that exists as well of, well, we're going to run the church the way we want to run a church, and our generation sees fit to run the church. And then there's this guy with this, like, well, we've churned the church for the same way for 7,000 years and we're going to blah, blah, blah. Dude, you need each other. You need each other. Your church will not survive if everyone ages out and you let it die. Your church will not survive if you do not have wisdom from the older generation to help you step around the landmines that they stepped directly on as they were coming through the church, right?
It's one of my pet peeves about churches these days, about they'll have like five or six services and it divides up the congregation, and you'll have a lot of the older people come at the early thing and you'll have a lot of the younger people come at the later thing, and then you end up with it not even really congealing in one church body, you know. But and the thing is for me, man, I look at this as like, it's not even where I think you have to strike out on your own or do anything like that, really. It's just like, take advantage of the, I mean, let me say this. It's different for everybody, right? I mean, like, not everybody has a big home. Not everybody has a lot of space or this or that or what, you know, I get it. You know, not everybody has land to do anything with or whatever. And I guess that's where I was, I don't know, even 10 years ago when I bought this place, was like, we really wanted to have the opportunity to be able to do those things and have space and all this stuff to where we could have extended family or whatever. If somebody needed a place or whatever, we could, you know, we could finagle it.
Yeah.
And even in our current house right here, man, I mean, we could totally have a whole other, you know, bedroom set up, or two more bedrooms set up, probably that kind of thing. And it's still, everybody still be comfortable.
You can, you've lived that.
Yeah.
Your father lived here for a while. You know, I've lived that. I mean, I lived with my grandparents. My uncles and aunts were there. I mean, I don't necessarily know it's so much about comfort anymore as it's so much about the perception of inconvenience. right?
Or the privacy. Like, everybody's worried about not having privacy.
Well, put your pants on. Stop walking around the house naked. You don't worry about privacy. Yeah, I mean, right. You know, there's a, if privacy is that big of an issue, calm down.
Like, really just don't care.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I don't know. But yeah, I just think that, especially in this right now where we could, we're at a pivotal point in our economic era, or if you want to call it that,
like, yes,
where it could go one or two ways, right? It's either going to get, well, it could stay the same, I guess, but which is not good. But I mean, you know, it could still be bad, or it could start increasing to be better. But at the end of the day, though, you're either way, I think you're just, it's okay if you want to look, if you get to be in, you're an adult and you want to get out and do your own thing and all that kind of stuff. That's look, you're an adult. Do what you want. But
if you start your career and you're doing well and you're making good money and you're able to make some moves, man, good on you.
Right? Yeah. But at the same token, though, I know that I was honored and privileged to be able to help my dad when he could not take care of himself all the way.
Yeah.
And I would not want, I would want my kids to feel the same way. Right. And yeah. That's kind of what I want to do, is make sure that they, you know, that there's always a sense that you don't have to go alone.
Yeah.
You know, that's the key. And
don't get me wrong. There are certain things that you're going to have to do in life alone.
Sure.
But not everything.
But like, you know, but one of the things that are like you said, our senior citizens, man, are getting the shaft. I mean, they're just getting thrown into homes and nobody comes to see them. And, you know, they just die a lonely death from just sitting there, right, with nobody around. I mean, that's not, I don't want that for anybody, man. I mean, that's just not cool, dude. I mean, I just think if you're, you know, I guess thankfully I do well enough to where I can have a space here big enough to expand things, right? But I don't know. Even if you didn't, I'm just sitting here thinking that, like, my own stepson, right? He, you know, he could always come back and stay here for a while, get on his feet and all this kind of stuff, whatever he needed or whatever. You know, I mean, that option's there. I've already said that to him, dude. I mean, it's like, you know, but there's keys to this.
Well, yeah.
The key, there's, you know, you can't sit there and have an adult kid come back to live in your house
and not contribute.
Well, not that, but expect them to, you can't be like the tyrannical father figure kind of person from my, so it's difficult for me. In a sense, not difficult, but I should say it's just a thing for me to not look at my son and go, he's not 13 anymore. He's 24, and it's not up to me to tell him, you know, he has to do this and has to do that. That's not it at all. As long as he's like not clean, you know, clean up after himself, just being a decent human being in the household. That's really it. Right.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, What were you going to say, Brian? I'm sorry.
Well, for me, there's more than just the – I mean, look at, like, the financial stability in multi-generational households versus single-generation households. Your lower housing costs, sharing home reduces mortgage and rent burdens, which is one of the reasons why you're seeing an increase in multi-generation homes now. Pooled resources, combined incomes help the families to save, pay off debt, or invest. 2020 study in social science and medicine found that Black and Latino multi-generation families had 30% less financial stress than similar single-generation homes. Elder care savings, nursing homes, dude, nursing homes are, oh. The biggest ripoff on planet Earth is a nursing home.
Oh, God, yeah, bro.
You're going to tell me that I can take somebody somewhere and for $1,500 a month, I can get them a single bedroom apartment larger than what they would get inside of a nursing home. But you want $6,000 a month and you're going to complain about how much, dude, you're making a fortune. Somebody's reaping heavy rewards, right? And if, then, I mean,
if you need care.
Yeah.
So the assisted living facilities
yeah.
have a level of care where they, cause they, they'll do like your laundry for you and,
yeah.
And do kind of, they'll do a lot for you.
They'll provide a lot for you without living life for you.
Yeah. But, and that's like what you're talking about, like $6,000 a month type of thing. Then you had the full on nursing homes, which is like nursing care that you need every day that you're not able to, you know, necessarily take care of on your own or whatever. And those are even higher. I know that some of the highest places where you have multi-generational households from what I found was in India. Well, that was the highest percentage.
Yes.
Nearly 40% of people live in a multi-generation household.
Very good friend of mine from India became a very successful entrepreneur. We talked once, man, and Rock and I were talking and he said, man, he goes, my mom and dad, grandparents, both my brothers, my sister, and all their kids live in the same 1,600 square foot house.
Right.
He goes, and they have for years.
No one cares.
And no one cares.
Yeah.
He's like, we share the space. Right. So, and I asked him, I was like, dude, that's a lot of people for one house. And he's like, it's all we've always lived.
Yeah.
It's like, we've never thought about it. He says, when I came here, he says, when I first moved to America, I got an 800 square foot apartment. He goes, and I felt an immense amount of loneliness and overwhelmed by how much room he had. And I was like, dude, but he was just like, hey, it wasn't the life that I had lived before I came here. He goes, when I came here with my wife, he wasn't married. He went to school. He said, I had this beautiful 800 square foot apartment, one bedroom, small kitchen, small living room. But he says the space I lived in inside that home with everything I owned was a third that large. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you know, he goes, and he said it, I initially was like, Americans are spoiled. And he's like, and then he got married and he said, we bought our first home. And he goes, we bought a very nice 2,000 square foot house and it was me and my wife. And he said, my wife came from a very similar family situation. And we were both, they said it was like living in a mansion.
Yeah.
He goes, and he was a minimalist. They didn't have a lot. Right. And he said, then he had his kids, had two kids. And he said, I had two kids and still had too much room. He's like, so I think a lot of it is this insane sense of entitlement as Americans that we have, that I have to have my space. No, you don't.
I mean, when I bought this house, that was one of the things I said, no, I want to be able to have as much space as I freaking want. I'm tired. You know, I grew up when I first grew up, right. Early in my, until I was 6 years old, it was a 2-room house. Yeah. Right. And I just remember everything broke all the time. I remember our stove arced in half. My mom was, it arced in half.
Wow. That's pretty intense.
Oh yeah. I mean, it was really old. It was whatever. And it was just, that stuck with me, man, for a long time. And so I've really not like, I don't like small spaces. Right.
Yeah, I get that.
Now that's a little different nowadays though. Like I just have too much stuff. That's really what all it boils down to. I just have a lot. I just have too much stuff and it is just stuff. I have a ton of stuff and it's stupid. But when we were living in New Albany, when I bought that house or whatever, the people that live behind me were Middle Eastern of some sort. I don't remember if it was Palestinian or Iranian or whatever. I don't know because we never got into that conversation or whatever. But you had the elderly couple that lived there, which is like the grandma and grandpa kind of thing. They had two sons that lived there. They were both doctors. I mean, it's not like they didn't do well. They were both doctors, right?
Yep.
And then they had kids, right? They all lived in this little house that was maybe 1,800 square feet or whatever.
Yeah.
And happy as can be. You see them all the time, come out in the backyard and just
laugh, you know, and have fun, carry on.
And I obviously don't know what their home life was like, but I mean, at the same token, here they were you know,
making it work.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and they seemed like they were nice people. They kept to themselves though. They didn't really want to talk to anybody, but I tried. I like pushed myself on. Hey, how you doing? Whoa. Hey.
Well, I mean, anyway. I had a friend from the Latino community. He had his mom, his dad, him, all three of his sisters, and all three of his sisters' kids living in a 1,400 square foot home.
Hey, man.
And they were the happiest people I'd ever met in my
life. There you go.
They were so excited and so fun. And they were so quick to invite me over and say, hey, man, come on over. Oh, God, Jesus made the best barbecue, man. It was so good. Like, I would just go over there and I would just chow, and they would cook for an army, but they all worked full time except for one sister, and she stayed at home with the kids, and they actually paid her part of the money they made to stay home and take care of the kids. So it was actually a job for her. So she would have money, right? It was so well thought through. And, you know, I asked him once, I was like, dude, you got a lot of people living in your house. And he's like, dude, we had all these people living in a house half this size in Mexico.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
he said, he said, I had one brother that literally lived in the shed behind our house in Mexico.
I don't know. If I could pull my two brothers into the same household and we all live under the same roof and everything,
yeah,
it would be so. I mean, granted, I'm sure there'd be some heavy, heavy adjustment because of just personality.
Well, knowing Robbie and you, how I know Robbie and you.
Yeah. My brothers.
You guys are good, cool dudes, but you're also good, cool dudes that like to do your own good, cool
things. Yeah. I mean, we get along really well together. Like, I'm thankful that me and my two brothers are close, and we do. But, you know, we're not the same people, you know, and we do have some differences in things, especially our family. Man, our families are a lot different, how the dynamics work and everything else. We're way different. But you talk about something that would increase your ability to do things, right? I mean, because like if you put your resources together like that, you know, all of a sudden you have three incomes contributing to that's a whole different story, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, I
and you have to be willing in that situation though to sacrifice some things.
You sure do.
Yeah.
Now, you know, and there's when I'm at the I don't remember what the band's called now. Can't remember it now, but they had a God, what was the name of the band now? It was a famous 80s band. Had the chainsaw song. Guy had a he traveled around with this had a I forgot what it was a crap, I can't remember it. But he had like these.
Is it Quiet Riot?
No.
A chainsaw song.
Yeah, he had the chainsaws on stage. Like they toured with these chainsaws. The leader would like pick up a chainsaw in the middle of this freaking song.
All right, I gotta look it up.
I don't remember the name of the band though, but they were really hicky people, right? And they were cool as all get out. Let me just say that, right? I played in a band that opened up for them, and I was talking to the drummer, right? And what did they do? Well, they all just bought this big compound for the whole family. The whole family lives in this compound in South Carolina. And they all just live there. And he was telling me a story about how his granddad came out half naked to shoot a turkey for Thanksgiving or something one morning out of the blue, you know. He said anyway, I won't say the descriptive that he was given, but it was just.
Was it Jackal?
Yes.
Okay.
Jackal.
Yeah.
Cool guys, man. Yeah. Super cool. Super cool guys.
Yeah. Okay. But sorry, I had to look that up.
Yeah.
You said chainsaw.
Yeah.
Band.
I know. Dude. But yeah, it was Jackal. They were super cool guys, and they were he was very the drummer especially. I was talking to him a lot because he was asking me about my drum kit, and I was asking him about stuff because he had an interesting looking kit and everything. But anyway, they obviously did something multi generational because they were living in a. their own compound with like their all their you know a lot of their family was like in one particular place that they had done right and I mean I think that's pretty cool. I think that there's I want to point out to according to actual studies there are some real big benefits though to this to multi-generational stuff and I really want to I'm aiming this at guys our age who need to start taking care of their parents if they're still around.
Well, one of the big benefits is the lessening of depression for people of an older age.
Right. It's according to
their mental health.
A 2021 study, the significant lower depression and anxiety for the senior citizens who live in multi-generational households. Yeah. Also, if you have kids, having the grandparents around like that increases their education and readiness and stuff. Their cognitive abilities and stuff actually increase. There's a study from 2019 that was talked about the child outcome of that was also greater having the grandparent around. Also, too, the grandparents are far more physically active and have a lot more cognitive engagement, which helps them deal with some of the things like dementia and all that other stuff that could come along. That's from a 2023 study.
There's another study I read that says it was done in 2022 that says that health-wise, dietary health, physical health, heart disease, things like that lessen in a multi-generation home because economically, by combining incomes, you can afford to buy better quality food, better quality health care. So there's all these little things that are just great dynamics, right? Like, and don't get me wrong. I know when we talk about this, there's some people that are kind of like, oh, I don't want people living in my house. I don't know. But dude, you got to get over that. I don't think grandma's going to climb into bed with y'all. It's okay. You need to relax, right? Like at the end of the day, you're doing a good thing. You're doing a good thing by providing a stable environment for grandma or your kids or your grandkids or whatever it is that you've got with you. You're actually doing a good thing.
Like here's what I was thinking about, right? So let's say you have a moderate house, let's say, I don't know, 1800 square foot house, right? How are you going to make all this work? Well, for one, when you have all these pooled resources, that's a significant less burden economically on a single family to put through, right?
Yep.
Well, who's to say you can't put in like a he shed or a she shed or something, you know, like those type of things you can do now, right? Especially when you're pulling in your resources like that, I mean, be easy enough to do that kind of thing, right? Where you'd have like you develop some spaces.
Or who's to say that you're in a smaller home, grandma moves in, she wants to contribute. Maybe you can afford to buy a little larger home.
Maybe.
Right? Like I think people's narrow view of this is the problem because they're like, well, we only have 1500 square feet. How are we going to take grandma and grandpa in? Or you could say, well, grandma and grandpa are going to be contributing now. We're going to be contributing. Let's look at maybe going to a 2000 square foot home, right?
Yeah.
You know, you have to have a little broader look at things and a little bigger perspective, right? Everybody goes into this protection mode, you know, get over it, man. It's okay. Right. So you have to give up a little bit of your elbow room. So you may have to move or change some things. Dude, change is inevitable.
Yeah, I mean, I just look at it like this, man. I don't know. Your family's worth it. Now, I get it that there's not everybody's had a great family experience with their grandparents or I know, man. or even in my own case, there's some stuff. But like, you know, at the end of the day, it's your family, dude. I mean, you know, and as generally speaking, and I can only speak for like what I saw with my dad. When they get older, man, things get a little different and their perspectives change and like things change. I know my grandfather, my dad's dad was something else. Like he was mean when he was in his prime. Like he didn't tolerate nothing. He was, you know, he didn't spare the rod or anything to my dad and the kids, right? No. But when he got older, he it he chilled out quite a bit, right? And he changed a lot. Now, he got really sick too. I mean, that changes things too. But, yep. You know, I know there's times when this is just not going to work. When, you know, your relationship with your parents is so strained, it would be a really bad idea to pull them in. Well, I get that, right? I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, I get that.
I'll be honest. My mother came to me once, asked me to move in with my wife and my kids, and it was a hard no.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Because my mother was a danger to my family, and I wasn't going to allow that to come into my home and wreck my marriage and my relationship with my kids. So,
but you know, we have some problems that if we start encouraging the multi-generational household idea, that would drastically help things go. For one, the housing market would change because you're not having as many single family houses out there that are on demand. You got the aging population, obviously, of boomers that are, man, they're, there's a lot of them.
It would force economical change in the elder care industry.
You'd help build wealth for your kids, for your kids faster. Yeah. Right. But there's a lot of things that would need to change, right? You'd have to change some of the zoning laws because they do have some things about that just seems a little silly to me. I get what that's for and I understand that, but you know, and there's like no, the taxes right now are just, I know they're trying to fix stuff and put tax cuts in, but man, they, you know, there's got to be some incentives to like help this out and encourage it more. But you know, there's a lot of things that here that can be really, really cool. In the U.S. right now, California is kind of leading the way with things with the laws. They accessory dwelling unit laws, they passed some of this stuff to help with like apartments and all that kind of crap. That's also led to like Airbnb stuff too, by the way. But there's also some cities that have like these accessory dwelling unit incentives and stuff. So you have a bunch of stuff there. Portland, Oregon, they removed a whole bunch of zoning stuff that were impacting that kind of thing, and that's helped there. Hawaii has actually done some things to help encourage that by doing some zoning stuff to have some tax breaks and stuff. So it's because it's one of the highest multi-gen, the Hawaiian population is, right? Right. New Jersey's done something. Anyway, the whole point is, you know, there are some states that have had to do some things like that in order to, because they're just, it's, well, for one, like if you talk about California, it's just like financially, like, good God, it's strangling you already anyway. So how else are you going to make it in there? Yeah. So, anyway, so multi-generational, I think it's just a thing to, I wanted to bring up because it just seems like in my lifetime, it was so not a thing. Like it was like, you're going to turn 18, go out on your own. You that now it's your turn to do it on your own, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And I just think that's kind of not the, well, it's not wrong, but it's not the right
way. Well, let's be honest. We ain't adults when we're 18.
No.
We might physically be adults, but mentally we're not there yet.
No, and financially you're not there. There's a lot of things that you could greatly benefit from concentrating on yourself, like trying to just be, you know, figuring things out and like, just doing either you're getting more education or you're learning a trade or what, or you're just saving money while you're working kind of thing. Yep. Dude, it's huge. That's huge if you do that early on, man. So anyway, I guess that I just was thinking about this a little bit, even with my own, you know, with stuff. And I'm thinking, you know, we really need to figure out a way to make that more viable for the current time period, dude. I mean, it just makes sense.
Especially in the financial place that we are in this country, it makes more sense now than ever.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, by 2030, all boomers will be 65 or older, and the 85 plus population will double by 2040.
Man.
Right? Cost of care. Nursing home cost average $100,000 a year.
Holy crap.
Yeah. And you know, look, I'm doing a crappy job with my retirement fund. I'll be honest with you. And it's the statistics to say that I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
You know, it's because it's been hard to put more back than it, than because you just got too much crap and the prices have gone up and all this other stuff.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. The wage hasn't gone up as much as the prices have gone up. And that's causing problems. America is heading for a financial hurricane. They literally said, I think the statistics that I read was 85% of generations from Gen X up into the current adult generation is living paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah, that's crazy, man.
It's not because credit card debt's high, but the problem is interest rates are high. You can't afford to buy a home. It's hard to afford to buy a car right now. Like, interest rates are so high at every angle that people can't advance. And I think, you know, we kind of talked about this in the beginning of the podcast. I think this is where our government is missing it. I've said this so many times before. I think if you run for Senate or you run for Congress, you should have to live under what the median income is in your state. So if the median income is $55,000, that's what you get paid to be a senator or a congressman.
I get it.
Because I've always said if the people up there had to live under the same laws and restrictions that we had to live under, they'd be a lot different. And I think that you have this real burden with all these things that are out of our control. I cannot control the fact that eggs are $10 a dozen. I cannot control the fact that, you know, bottled water. I mean, bottled water has got expensive, right? Like it's gotten out of control. And you know, if you have a major catastrophe in your home and you have to do repairs, dude, you're going to have to make some serious life adjustments, right? There's all these things going on. And I think that it's just this time of our lives, multi-generational housing just makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah. There's a lot here, dude. I mean, I use DeepSeek AI for this, by the way, and then cross-reference. You know, what's funny is when you, again, using AI is helpful in a lot of ways, but you got to actually go to the source stuff to verify things. So there's a lot of information if you want to look for things. There's actual case studies. There's a lot of real world examples and stuff like that you can find out there. AI was helpful in helping me find the direct links to. But I would just say I'm just going to echo what you just said. Yeah, it's going to have to be a thing. And I know some of those conversations could be pretty tough. But you know, I don't know. I would totally figure something out if I could get some of the family to get together. I mean, it wouldn't bother me that much as long as there's a place. Like, you know, I think for everybody, the biggest thing is like, well, is there a, you know, am I going to have a way to have some kind of privacy or whatever? And I mean, sure, you have to figure that out, but yeah, having, you know, all that kind of stuff. But anyway, that's all the time we have for today, Brian.
Yes, that's all the time we have for today, Reggie.
Yeah. Okay. We're R&B Talks.
I'm Brian.
I'm Reggie.
See you guys.
Bye-bye.